You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Wednesday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a very busy and exciting show for you this hump day. Hope you are ready to be with us the entire afternoon, because you're not going to want to miss any of what we've got to share with you this afternoon. Great group of guests lined up, and topics that I think every single one of us here in Wisconsin and beyond will be deeply interested in. We're talking about corruption. We're talking about new people running for elected office, something I always want to see. Yes, we need fresh ideas, and that means fresh candidates. We'll be talking to one of those for a contested state Senate seat. Can't wait to have that discussion. And I've got a very special guest for all of you lined up right off the top to start the show. Before we bring on that guest, let me share with you some of the things that grabbed my attention today in the news. Well, folks, haters gonna hate. I guess it is as right or as predictable as you can possibly get, right up there with the sun rising in the east. Unbelievably, candidate for governor Sarah Rodriguez, Wisconsin's current lieutenant governor, guest of this program yesterday, had to post on what used to be called Twitter, now X, that, her husband is not undocumented. I kid you not, this was an actual thing that the candidate for governor had to respond to. Apparently, some reporters around the state got tips from, of course, unnamed sources that her husband is undocumented. She responded to these claims. Again, those are false claims, unfounded lies. She responded on X yesterday saying this: reporters got a quote tip that my husband is undocumented. Spoiler, he's a proud naturalized U.S. citizen. We are 5 days into this race, and my opponents are already resorting to racist, made-up attacks about my family. It's pathetic, it's ugly, and it sure as hell won't lower a single grocery bill or fix a single school. If this is their best shot, they better pack a damn lunch. Good for you, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, and shame on you, the xenophobic fearmongers on the right side of the dial attacking our lieutenant governor on baseless grounds. In that same vein, today, if you were watching any of the national news, you may have spotted Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orten right off the right hand, the right shoulder of President Trump. Speaking about bullies and jerks, yes, it would seem that Derek Van Orten wants no daylight between himself and the president, despite the president's ongoing scandal relating to the Epstein files. That one just won't go away. Of course, all of that smacking of conflicts of interest and overt corruption, we're going to get to that discussion today. At 5 o'clock, I've got Professor of Political Science Emeritus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Howard Schwaber, joining me and you. We're going to have a wide-ranging discussion about corruption, what it looks like, how it impacts your lives, and what each of us can do about it. And again, speaking of politicians that are letting Wisconsinites down seemingly on a daily basis, Tom Tiffany, boy, he doesn't ever disappoint, except when he's disappointing Wisconsinites. That's what you can count on. Now he's going after HB1 visa program recipients that work within the University of Wisconsin system. He is attacking those visa recipients, saying this: American students spend years earning degrees only to watch universities hand out good-paying jobs to foreign workers on special visas. His bill to stop this process of the use of HB1 visas by institutions of higher learning, he said his bill will, quote, end the backdoor hiring practices that undercut American workers. This means that Tom Tiffany knows absolutely jack squat nothing about HB1 visas, which are only used and can be only granted when the employer here, the University of Wisconsin system, has a prolonged and persistent problem filling those roles with American citizens. that's actually how the visa program works. But, you know, Tom Tiffany, not so concerned about actual facts or data or reality, as long as he can make a good xenophobic point to score points with the only constituent that Tom Tiffany is actually concerned about, President Donald Trump. As we turn the page and bring on our special guest for this first half hour, what is all of this about at a certain level? I have said to you all many times on this program that I think it's a very weird moment in American history when a billionaire president thinks it's a good look that appeals to working people and folks that have bosses and get paychecks across this country to stand on his inaugural stage, shoulder to shoulder, with the rest of this country's billionaire class. To me, that shows a president that's deeply out of touch with regular Americans. In fact, if you don't pump your own gas or buy your own groceries, I'm not sure you should be an elected official at all, because indeed, you are completely out of touch with those kitchen table issues. Now, what I think is interesting is that there's a number of very, very, very wealthy folks out there that actually think the Trump handouts to billionaires, 100 millionaires, and the set that put their names on buildings is actually a terrible, no good, very bad idea that will actually make it harder for people who start their own businesses and do well to continue to do well into the future. We're going to break all that down for you with this next guest, Morris Pearl. He used to be a managing director at BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. Welcome back to the program, Morris. It's really great to have you.
Maggie, it's great to be in your show. Thank you.
So you were quoted in a front page article that ran this past weekend in the Washington Post. And it basically says, hey, we've got some really, really, really rich people who are opposed to these handouts to really, really rich people by Donald Trump. Tell us a little bit about what you had to say in the article and why, as someone who never has to work again in your entire life, you oppose these handouts to the ultra, ultra wealthy. Folks, I'm not talking about people that have saved up a couple of million dollars to get them through retirement or trying to buy their kids a house. We're not talking about you. We're talking about wealth at a completely different level. Tell us about it, Morris.
Well, first of all, the reason that we're doing what we're doing, because we don't want to live in a country where there's a few oligarchs who have all the money and everyone else is poor. Even if you're one of the few rich people, that doesn't work. I represent a group of millionaires, business people, and investors who made a lot of money. But they made almost all of it selling stuff to people who had enough money to live on and to be able to afford expensive ice cream or expensive shoes or expensive groceries in organic grocery stores. Those kinds of people are the kind of people we need living in our country so that we as business people and investors can actually make money. And just to think about what kind of people we're talking about when we say taxing rich people. Most people in Wisconsin know who, like, the famous, Giannis Antetokounmpo is, the star of the Bucks. He makes over $50 million a year. In a good year, he makes more money than 1,000 typical Wisconsin households, 1,000 times. But who's really rich? Right up the street here from my home in New York City is a family called the Lazarys, Mark and Kathy. Wonderful people, very sweet, have good parties in their townhouse in Manhattan. Mark started at one of the most successful hedge funds in the country, made billions of dollars for his clients and a billion or two for himself too. He and his partners own the Milwaukee Bucks for 9 years. I don't think it's a total coincidence that his son is the senior vice president of the franchise. The star of the team is doing well, but he's not the really rich person we're talking about. The really rich person we're talking about is somebody like Mark Lazary, multi-billionaire hedge fund manager who has more money than he even knows how to keep track of. Those are the ultra-rich people we're talking about, not your retired high school principals who saved up a few million dollars because they invested wisely in the stock market for 40 years. Not even your star basketball players who've made tens of millions of dollars a year. We're talking about the ultra rich billionaires who are taking over this country because they have so much money. They can spend so much money on politics, and they can really outspend everyone else and sort of dominate our political system. Those are the kind of people we're talking about, who are, frankly, a few of them, trying to make our country back into the kind of oligarchy that they kind of have memories of growing up in or something. That's the kind of rich people we're talking about, Maggie.
Such an important point, because one of the things that I think has been such a challenge for folks that are advocating for an economy that actually works for the vast majority of us, I think sometimes the message that we put out there makes those hardworking people that have had a boss, that have saved, that have lived prudently, who, again, save for retirement, work so hard to try to help their kids afford college or university, who maybe want to help their kids buy their first homes. We're not talking about those folks, even the doctors and the lawyers, even some of the professional athletes that make certain sums of money that to many of us sound like, oh my gosh, those are rich people. What we're talking about is that completely different other level. And the reason that I think in part, Morris, it's so hard for people to understand who we're talking about is that regular Wisconsinites, including the doctors and lawyers and maybe principals or teachers or small business owners that have worked and saved their whole lives, we don't actually ever interact with any of these uber, uber wealthy people that we're talking about. So it's hard to understand who they are. They exist literally in a different universe than the rest of us that have had bosses and get paychecks. Go ahead, sir.
I remember I was once going with my family on vacation to Berlin. We had tickets to fly first class United to Berlin.
Yes.
We go to the airport. There's a brief delay. We're ushered into a fancy dining room at the United Polaris something or other.
Yes.
They're serving us the fancy dinner. My son's girlfriend says, oh, this is how the rich people live. And I just want to tell you, no.
No.
This is not how the rich people are not wandering through Newark Airport. The rich people are in a different airport altogether with their limos dropping them off in front of their private jets.
Yeah,
we are not the really rich people.
Yeah, it's the private jet folks. That's who we're talking about. We're going to continue this discussion about how to make the economy work better for people who work for a living, who get paychecks, who save their entire lives. We're talking about how to make the economy work better for you. We've got a special guest, Morris Pearl, former managing director at BlackRock. We'll continue this great discussion on the other side. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Wednesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about making sure people understand how the economy works or doesn't work for them. And when we talk about reforming tax policy so that the economy works for all of us, especially us folks that have always had a boss, always saved, always worked hard, how it doesn't work, where that breaks down. But more importantly, when we talk about reforming the tax code in this country, who actually are we talking about asking more of? Because my thesis, my guess, is that so many hardworking Wisconsinites and Americans, but especially in places like Wisconsin, where hard work, frugality, and again, saving and planning are very treasured values, my belief is that so many people who fall into that category think that when we talk about rich folks paying their fair share, we're talking about taxing them more, when the reality is we have to start with the most basic fairness, and that is the billionaire set. We're talking about taxing people who put their names on hospitals, on university buildings, who endow things for generations, whose children and grandchildren will never have to work. We're talking about that kind of rich, not the folks that have saved diligently their whole lives in the hopes of enjoying some retirement, in the hopes of helping their kids afford their education and maybe their first homes, helping their grandkids out a bit. No. If that's you, that's not the most pressing concern about fairness. That's not you at all. It's the ultra wealthy. I've got a great guest with me here to help us understand what we're actually talking about more. His name is Morris Pearl. He's a former managing director at BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. Morris, what should people know about the sort of changes to the tax code that can help ensure that the economy continues to be fair or fairer, that it continues to grow and expand so that people who are well-to-do but are working people who are well-to-do continue to be able to sell their products to us, the consumers? What should we be changing?
Yeah, the problem we're talking about, Mackie, is that most people get a paycheck every week or month, taxes are deducted from that every time. Those are not the people who are really rich. Rich investors, and I'm in the lower end of the rich investor crowd, we don't get paychecks. We don't have anything that's tax deducted. I pay taxes very rarely, actually. The thing that I learned is that if you're really rich, you don't need any income. And if you don't have income, you don't pay income taxes. How much I spend and how much taxable income I have nothing to do with each other, in my case. Because I'm spending investment money. I'm taking money out of my brokerage account, and it may go negative, it may go positive, it may do whatever. And someday I'll sell some stocks and maybe I'll have realized capital gains, but maybe that'll be after I die. So with the step-up basis rules, neither my estate nor my children or anyone else will ever pay taxes on all the money I've made. That's why some people who are already rich are getting richer and richer and richer. And the rest of the people who have taxes deducted from their paycheck every single week or month are kind of struggling to get by. And we have to do something about that. We have to make investors pay the same taxes that everyone else makes on the money they make. That's my suggestion. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to codify into the tax code with our proposals.
And one of the things that I think is really interesting here is that I think when I sit down with folks that are conservatives of good faith, that point gets lost a good bit. And that is simply that the tax rates that apply to a dollar that is earned from work are so much higher than the tax rates, if they apply at all, to the dollars that are earned from wealth. Again, I'm not talking about 401k. I'm not talking about your investment accounts for people that have had to save and are still having to look carefully at what savings they have for the rest of their lives. I'm not talking about that. It's when you get into the scaled wealth of the ultra wealthy, where you can see they have teams of people managing their money to manage their tax loads down to infinitesimally nothing. That's the problem there. So many tactics to avoid taxation that are not available for working people. Morris, as we come up on the end of the segment, what is the one thing that you think Wisconsinites should be asking their elected officials in Congress or within the state to be considering to help ensure that our economic growth actually benefits the people who create it, that is those that work for bosses and get paychecks?
I think they should tell their elected representatives, both in Washington and in Wisconsin, to make people who get money from investments to pay the same tax rates that they do. That's my message. The money I make as I just sit here and watch my investments go up and up and up, should be taxed at the same rates as the money that you make when you get your paycheck every week.
Folks, that's Morris Pearl. He's a former managing director at BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. He's a friend of the show, now a friend of yours. You can check out more. We're going to drop some links to some websites that include all kinds of information about reforming the tax code, starting with taxing wealth for the ultra wealthy, at least at the same rate that your paycheck gets taxed at, not some imaginary lower rate. And we can get rid of some of those pesky loopholes like stepped up basis and all sorts of things. Thanks so much, Morris. This discussion will continue. We'll also post that Washington Post article about the rich folks that are asking to pay more in taxes. You can find that all in our show notes when you go find the Maggie Dawn Show podcast on Apple Pod, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. Up next, we'll be talking to Lisa White, state candidate for the 17th Senate District, about being a newbie to politics and what she hopes to bring to Wisconsin.
It is Wednesday. It is 4:30. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I should say it's 4:35 to be exact. And this time each week, whenever we can, we have a little segment that I like to call Broad Appeal, where we elevate women in leadership positions, women candidates and women elected officials, and women talking about politics writ large. Hence, broads with lots of appeal. And I mean that with deep and reverential respect. I'm often joined by a colleague in broadcasting here at Civic Media, Dr. Kristen Lierley. You can find her great program on WGBW on Saturdays. Kristen, tell the folks what time your program airs at.
And WISS in Oshkosh. Awesome. We air at 3 p.m. And this week we are talking about food. You know when you go to those events and there's a ton of food left over and you look at it and you think, are they really going to throw that stuff away? They don't have to. There are things that we can do. So we're going to talk about how we can get food to the people who need it.
Yeah, a little bit less food waste. We're pretty good at that here in this country. Epic piles of it apparently every year. Certainly not helped by the Trump administration incinerating tons of food that was otherwise destined to help needy families across the United States. But I digress. Let's bring on our special guest. She is a candidate for the State Senate District 17 here in the state of Wisconsin, a newbie to politics, and thus someone I definitely want to talk to. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Lisa White. Thanks for being here, Lisa.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
Let's start with the obvious question. Why in God's green earth did you decide to get involved in politics, given that we're in the current state of play? It seems so contentious, so personalized, so awful. Most people are tuning out. Why are you not only tuning in, but stepping up to run in the 17th Senate District?
Well, I tell you what, my interest in politics goes back to way back 1974. Talk about broad appeal. I'm kind of an old broad. I saw our very first state Senate candidate or actual elected senator who was a woman, Senator Katie Morrison in 1974. And I was one of the nerd kids that stayed after the school rally and got her autograph. And after that, I engaged in high school government, Badger Girls State, and did a lifelong actual leadership thing. And I was the firstborn of seven kids. So right there, boom, leadership on a farm. And I was president of the Potosi Chamber of Commerce and helped elevate the Potosi Brewery from the ashes, made that viable. And I always have been very interested in leadership. I've been an entrepreneur most of my adult life. So what made me jump in finally was, I think I probably owe Donald Trump a thank you note. Thanks for the fire in my belly. Because in 2015, when I saw the antics he pulled, and I didn't think he would ever get this far. I have been in kind of a state of continual shock about that. And when Roe v. Wade was overturned, that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. In addition, my company, the Painter Lady LLC, employs a pretty prominent immigrant population. And I have eight grandkids, three of whom have autism, and I'm really concerned about their future. And as if I don't have enough right there to motivate me, my 91-year-old dad was 7 years old when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and he described the terror they felt when they thought that there was an existential threat to democracy. And now at age 91, and my mom is 86, he is shuddering at the thought of the dismantling of democracy, and it's a domestic threat rather than an external threat. All those things combined with my extreme passion for my clients, my family, being a lifelong resident of Grant County and of Southwest Wisconsin, this culture is in my soul. How can I not run? I have the business acumen and the skill set. How can I not run?
I love that. How can I not run? And Lisa, everything that you just said just made me go, yes, 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 more of that. And then I thought 1974 was when we elected the first woman. That was 50 years ago. And still 51. Only, yes, and only a third of our state legislators are women. And that is a record number. It is crazy.
And on top of that, we haven't had a senator from this area of the state, the Southwest counties, since then. 51 years. And I feel like sometimes the people in this portion of the state have been made to feel invisible and underrepresented. And I am one of their own, homegrown. And the cool thing is that since I do business as the Painter Lady LLC, one of the top 2% women-owned businesses, I feel like the bridge builder who can come from the West, understand people because I do business there, and I do business in the East, in the greater Madison area. And I understand the cultural divide. I speak to it every day for my bread and butter. And I feel like I can be that bridge builder and kind of coalesce the population and get them to align and be cooperative.
How do you do that, Lisa? What are your thoughts about, both as a candidate and if you're elected, how do you help people find those places of connection and actual shared interests and values? Because that's been one of the things that continues, I think, to be a challenge for many candidates and many elected officials, is you can see that people have shared interests, you can see that people have shared values, and yet our political debates seem to be dictated to us top down, right? From the national, into the state, into the local, when in fact, most people's impact, their lives are impacted greatly and most directly by their local government. In other words, it's from the grassroots up. And so we end up in this highly fractured but artificial place of division. How do you plan to bridge those gaps as a small business owner to say to other small business owners, hey, we deserve to do better? How do you do that?
I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
We're breaking up just a little bit. I think it got through though. Let me know if I'm breaking up on my end. I love that question, because I think the number one thing that we have to do as representatives is to listen, to simply listen to what people need. And in business, I found that out. When I designed my business, one of the things I noticed that was missing was there was a contractor-centric approach rather than a client-centric approach. I am a voter, everyday, hardworking person, listener. And I think when we get marching orders from the top down and artificial overlay and chaos, certainly, we miss those voices. Also, I think a lot of, there are voters out here who I have seen become disenchanted, complacent. They feel that lack of empowerment back to not having good representation for decades. I think just the idea that there is a real person here listening to them will electrify that voting base and bring people to the table. Otherwise, their voices would not have been heard. Mm-hmm. I think that the key is to listen, find that we're probably arguing both sides of the same coin, and become a liaison.
Lisa, you are so right. There are so many people out there. We're all involved in politics. We're all paying attention, but most people aren't like us. And many, many people feel disenfranchised. They think the government, Republicans, Democrats, everything, none of it is working for them. They're looking for something different. They're looking for someone who will actually hear them. What kind of a response have you seen in the district where you have lived your entire life, now that you've stepped into this very public role?
Well, what I was pleasantly surprised by, this just happened yesterday. My campaign support gal, my right-hand gal, and I were doing some phone calling, right? Shock of my life, I thought I was calling a person with a known cell phone number, and I got a 30-year-old male on the phone. And that demographic has been being won over by the other side, if you will. And what once I engaged him and started to ask him questions about real life, like what wakes him up at night, what's wrong with politics, he was on the phone for a good 10 to 15 minutes. And this was a person who ordinarily I feel like would have just given me the hand and said, I'm a Republican, I'm not talking to you. But by asking him a couple of strategic questions and really trying to hear him, that not happened once, but twice. We had two young gentlemen on there. And I asked permission to speak with them again, and they were incredibly enthusiastic, and one even texted a thank you message. And I think having been in the trades and being able to bridge the gender divide actually helped. Being able to, and this is kind of funny, I say it with a lot of love in my heart, man speak and woman speak, being able to find the common ground of relatability. Because when you think about it, all humans, what do we need? We need something good to eat. We need food security. We need medical, right? We need a warm place to be. I don't care what color, gender, or, you know, it just, boil it down. Let's get to personal economy, what each person needs and what their real time concerns are. And you can relate. That's kind of my plan.
I love it. Relate, find the points of common need. And those are common needs that I feel are being met less and less, that elected officials, the more gerrymandered, the more extreme, the more, the less competitive districts are, the more it enables elected officials to tune out and not hear what people are saying they need, and instead assuming we know, or that an elected official knows what people need. It's such a fundamentally humble approach, Lisa. We've got just a couple minutes before we have to take care of some business. How does your experience help you approach these questions with that humility that's necessary to actually hear and listen to what people are saying they need?
I think over the years, with employing people and listening to their needs, when you write out their paychecks, in my small company, they become family members. And they bring things to me that are intensely private, have a huge effect on them. Right now, my immigrant population living in terror, I see that in real time. Also, you know, having a large family, I've had a lot of things to overcome. I have had a divorce, and my grown children, as I mentioned earlier, I have three autistic grandchildren. I feel like being the age that I am and having gone through all of those things, it only lends to him, and have the background as a mental health nurse also. Mm.
We're talking with Lisa White. She's the candidate, one of the candidates for the 17th State Senate district here in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to talk to her about the role that political parties play, especially when they pick their favorites, especially when they do so early in election cycles. You're not going to want to miss that hot conversation coming up on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Wednesday around this time, we have a segment that we call Broad Appeal, where I talk with women candidates, women elected officials, women talking about politics, because the ladies, yes, the broads, have great appeal. And I think maybe the key to trying to find a common ground again, a common footing, especially when we talk about women elected officials from the local level upwards. Boy, do I wish we could reset our frame to focus ourselves, our minds, our political discourse based on what's happening in our communities and then work up and out. I think it would change politics in America fundamentally to the benefit of us all. We've got a candidate, one such candidate this half hour. Her name is Lisa White. She's running for the state Senate seat in the 17th district. I'm also joined by my frequent guest and co-host of this segment, Dr. Kristen Lierley. You can find her amazing program on WISS and WGBW on Saturdays. Lisa, right before we had to take a break, I teased up this question to you. As someone who's new, not paying attention to politics, but actually as a candidate, a new candidate, what is your view and what is your reaction to the fact that it seems like political parties in this country and in this state, we're no exception, play and have this incredibly outsized influence on candidates, particularly in the primary cycle? An example is the 17th Senate district race itself, with numerous other candidates, including yourself on the Democratic side, announcing. The Wisconsin Democratic Party has already announced and endorsed a particular candidate. What's your reaction to that and the question more broadly about the role of parties in our politics?
Well, you know, I think one of our reactions as citizens and politicians is that we feel like we're in extraordinary times. And we feel like we need to take extraordinary measures. And I think part of the SSDC's reaction and early endorsement is kind of a reaction to a political dystopia now. However, our country has been through so many political cycles that looked treacherous and scary. I think we need to always go back to that core belief that we are a democracy. Many voices keep us healthy. There is a collective knowledge many times. And by announcing an endorsement so early, it actually has a suppressive effect on voters. They feel like, oh, my vote doesn't count. This doesn't matter. I don't have a place at the table. That is the danger. I was disappointed personally because I feel like in a democracy, we do have that right to run for office, have our voices heard. But then an underdog spirit took over in me. And I thought, you know, I'm tired of the big money in politics. I can speak to that. We're all tired of that influence. We saw Elon Musk in the state Supreme Court justice race and what that did, the effect that had. I think that's fresh in people's minds. And I think they are hungry for good discourse. I think that when we stress again the basic tenets of democracy and multiple voices and letting the stronger candidates emerge on their own. I've coupled that with that underdog push, that fire in my belly is now raging. It's not just a fire in my belly. It is something that I have set my business aside for my family to run so I can 24/7 play out the underdog story, go talk to people, meet them where they live, and then see what happens. We're a whole year away from a primary. A lot of things can happen.
I love Lisa, that, Lisa. Keep going. Keep that fire in your belly. Kristen, you had a question. Excuse me.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say the Senate Democrats have chosen and they are endorsing your opponent. So what is your plan? You are the underdog. You've got all of this experience, all of this support. How do you put it to work for you?
How I put it to work is if I keep that core common sense value of talking to people, engaging people, they can never doubt what I say. I'm not AI after all, because if I'm standing right there talking to them, it's going to be memorable. Now, the really cool thing about my business history, which encompasses the entire 17th district, is I have been knocking doors, literally painting living rooms, putting shingles on rooftops, standing in these people's front yards. Now, I challenge anybody in 450 days to knock the doors I've knocked over the last 33 years. Also, I feel confident in the relationships that I built with these folks in this district prior to the partisan politics taking over. And a lot of the, this is embarrassing. When I was a young woman, I worked for grandma and grandpa, and now the first time homeowners that my company is running into are the grandchildren of these people. And I remember, oh, the maiden names, the dog's name, you know, whatever. And I think that what I've been seeing happening is this, this kind of long-term door knocking, if you will, is in place and it's growing. And I'm going to circle back to those relationships before partisan politics and talk like I've always talked to these folks who are my friends and my neighbors. And that's kind of a big plan.
I love that, Lisa. Lisa, we've got about a minute left. What is your message to voters in the 17th Senate District? Why should they vote for you in the primary and the general?
I want people to be reassured that even though this is chaotic, our democracy is in place, there are so many more of us than there are of them. I say that, them. And that we need to hold hands, we need to network, coalesce, and put our democracy upright. And it can be done. It can be done. Don't give up and talk to me.
Don't give up. Talk to Lisa White. She's listening, candidate for the State Senate 17th District. Big thanks to her and Dr. Kristen Lierley, my frequent co-host of this segment, Broad Appeal, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. When we come back, I'll be joined by Professor Howard Schwaber. We take your questions about corruption next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.